Hello and welcome to another edition of Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. Today is Friday, October the 7th of 2016. I'm going to do this episode on an issue related to text criticism. It's not text criticism of the New Testament, which I most often address, but this one relates to text criticism and the Old Testament. And I had someone forward to me an article that appeared in the New York Times a couple weeks ago. It appeared on September 21, 2016, an article by Nicholas Wade under the title, Modern Technology Unlocks Secrets of a Damaged Biblical Scroll. So I want to talk a little bit about this article, some of the things that are in it. And then I want to talk just a little bit about Old Testament text criticism and where we are with regard to modern critical editions of the Hebrew Bible and translations of the Hebrew Bible. So first of all, this article is really fascinating. And I'll, of course, on my blog, jeffriddle.net, I will have a post on this. And I'll have links to some of the things I'm going to mention, including this New York Times article and a really fascinating video on YouTube about how they were able to use technology to unlock the contents of this scroll. But got to watch that video. So the article starts off, nearly half a century ago, archaeologists found a charred ancient scroll in the Ark of a synagogue on the western shore of the Dead Sea. The lump of carbonized parchment could not be opened or read. Its curators did nothing but conserve it, hoping that new technology might one day emerge to make the scroll legible. And there in the video, you'll see in the article too, some pictures of this thing. It just, again, just looks like a big lump of dirt. You wouldn't guess that there would be a scroll inside of this. But anyways, the article goes on to say, just such a technology has now been perfected by computer scientists at the University of Kentucky. Working with biblical scholars in Jerusalem, they have used a computer to unfurl a digital image of the scroll. And so when they did this, it turns out that the scroll was part of the text of the book of Leviticus, and it is now the oldest example that we have of the Masoretic text or the traditional text of the Hebrew Bible. So let me read a little bit more of the article. It says, it turns out to hold a fragment identical to the Masoretic text of the Hebrew Bible, and at nearly 2,000 years old, it is the earliest instance of the text. The writing retrieved by the computer from the digital image of the unopened scroll is amazingly clear and legible in contrast to the scroll's blackened and beat-up exterior. Never in our wildest dreams did we think anything would come of it, said Pina Shore, the head of the Dead Sea Scrolls Project at the Israel Antiquities Authority. Scholars say this remarkable new technique may make it possible to read other scrolls too brittle to be unrolled. The scroll's content, the first two chapters of the book of Leviticus, has consonants. Early Hebrew texts didn't specify vowels that are identical to those of the Masoretic text. The authoritative version of the Hebrew Bible and the one often used as the basis for translations of the Old Testament in Protestant Bibles. The Dead Sea Scrolls, those found at Qumran and elsewhere around the Dead Sea, contain versions quite similar to the Masoretic text, but with many small differences. The text in the scroll found at the En Gedi excavation site in Israel decades ago has none, according to Emmanuel Tove, an expert on the Dead Sea Scrolls at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. We have never found something as striking as this, Dr. Tove said. This is the earliest evidence of the exact form of the medieval text, he said, referring to the Masoretic text. The experts say this new method may make it possible to read other ancient scrolls, including several Dead Sea Scrolls and about 300 carbonized ones from Herculaneum, which were destroyed by the volcanic eruption of Mount Vesuvius in AD 79. The date of the Engedi scroll is the subject of conflicting evidence. A carbon-14 measurement indicates that the scroll was copied around AD 300, but the style of the ancient script suggests a date nearer to AD 100. We may safely date this scroll to between AD 50 and 100, wrote Ada Yardani, an expert on Hebrew paleography, in an article in the journal Textus. Dr. Tove said he was inclined toward a first century date based on paleography. The feat of recovering the text was made possible by software programs developed by W. Brent Seals, a computer scientist at the University of Kentucky. Inspired by the hope of reading the many charred and unopenable scrolls found at Herculaneum near Pompeii in Italy, Dr. Seals has been working for the last 13 years on ways to read the text inside an ancient scroll. Let me skip a couple of paragraphs. He has since developed a method called virtual unwrapping to model the surface of an ancient scroll in the form of a mesh of tiny triangles. Each triangle can be resized by the computer until the virtual surface makes the best fit to the internal structure of the scroll as revealed by the scanning method. The blobs of ink are assigned to their right place on the structure, and the computer then unfolds the whole 3D structure into a 2D sheet. The suite of software programs called Volume Cartography will become open source when Dr. Seals' current government grant ends, he said. The Engedi scroll was brought to Dr. Seals' attention by Dr. Shore, a colleague, Sefi Porat, who had helped excavate the Engedi synagogue in 1970, was preparing a final publication of the findings. He asked Dr. Shore to scan the scroll and other artifacts as part of a project to create images of the Dead Sea Scroll material and showed her a box full of lumps of charcoal. I said, "There is nothing we can do because our system isn't geared toward those chunks," she said. But because she was submitting other objects for a high-resolution scan, she put one of the lumps in with the other items. Dr. Shore had the lump scanned by a commercially available X-ray-based microcomputed tomography machine of the kind used for fine-resolution scanning of biological tissue. Knowing of Dr. Seal's work, she sent him the scan and asked him to analyze it. Both were surprised when, after several refinements, an image emerged with clear and legible script. We were amazed at the quality of images. Much of the text is as readable as that of unharmed Dead Sea Scrolls, said Michael Siegel, a biblical scholar at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, who helped analyze the text. The surviving content of the Engedi scroll, the first two chapters of Leviticus, is part of a listing of various sacrifices that were performed in biblical times at the temple in Jerusalem. Let me just skip on down to the last paragraph. It doesn't tell us what was the original text, only that the Masoretic text is a very ancient text in all of its details, Dr. Siegel said. And we now have evidence that this text was being used from a very early date by Jews in the land of Israel. Again, I will put a link to this article, and I'll also put a link to the YouTube video, which is fascinating. I encourage you to watch that. So anyhow, here's the thing. So 1970, they're excavating a synagogue, and they find a box that was meant to hold the scroll, and they find this charred chunk of stuff, and they don't throw it away. They hang on to it. And fast forward 46 years, and a computer scientist at University of Kentucky is able to use this new software, and it is able to virtually unwrap this document, and now we can read it. And it turns out that this document is part of the book of Leviticus. And it is the oldest document that we now have showing the Masoretic text of the Hebrew Bible, the traditional text of the Hebrew Bible, dating it to roughly the late 1st, early 2nd century, showing that it was indeed in use. It is not, as Emmanuel Tove said, merely a medieval text, but it is obviously an ancient text, as ancient as any other part of the Hebrew Bible that has yet been discovered. So let me just follow up with a couple of observations about this. One of the things that we need to be reminded of is simply the fact that text criticism, when we talk about text criticism in the Bible, it's not just a matter of the New Testament. We talk a lot about the New Testament because there is more controversy over the New Testament, and we've had efforts to reconstruct the New Testament since the 19th century, since Westcott and Hort and others. And so there's just more conversation about it. But text criticism also involves, obviously, the text of the Old Testament. And once again, from a confessional perspective, if you follow a confession like the Westminster Confession of Faith or the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith, you believe not only in the immediate inspiration of the scriptures in the original languages in Hebrew and Greek, but also in their providential preservation. And the question then is, what text of the Bible has been providentially preserved? And we make the argument for the New Testament, obviously, that that is the Textus Receptus, the first printed text that became the basis for the Protestant translations. And with regard to the Old Testament, we believe that that preserved text is what is often called the Masoretic text, so-called because it was preserved by Hebrew scholars who were called the Masoretes, very carefully, very meticulously copied it. And we refer again to this as the Masoretic text. Now, the issue is that in modern times, again, the traditional text of the Bible has been challenged. So with regard to the Old Testament, you can see this in modern translations. There's a tendency in modern translations of the Old Testament to begin to depart from the Masoretic text readings and to introduce readings that are drawn from other sources, most notably from the Latin Vulgate, from the Septuagint, from the Dead Sea Scrolls, from the Samaritan Pentateuch, and to give alternate translations. And I haven't done as many text notes on my blog on the Old Testament as I have done on the New Testament, but if you look at my blog, you'll find that I have done several on Old Testament. If you look, for example, there, and I'll put some links, there are a number of these, particularly in places where the Septuagint has different readings than the Masoretic text. So like in the book of 1 Samuel, you'll find lots of differences. And I just looked at my text criticism page, and I'll put links up to some of the articles that I've done on 1 Samuel chapter 13. I've got a post on verse 1, verse 5, verse 15, 1 Samuel 16, 7, and also issues related to 1 Samuel chapters 17 and 18. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, the Septuagint has quite a different text. It omits a lot. It doesn't have 1 Samuel 17, verses 12 through 31, verse 41, verse 50, verses 55 through 58, and it doesn't have the opening five verses of 1 Samuel 18. And you can simply take any modern translation, take the ESV, and just scan the footnotes at the bottom of the page, and you'll see references to, again, the Septuagint, the Samaritan Pentateuch, the Dead Sea Scrolls. And what you see there are suggestions that the traditional text be altered based on these alternatives, often drawn from versions or translations. But the idea is, so they think, there were Hebrew texts that were the basis of, say, the Septuagint or the Latin Vulgate. And so they're speculating or conjecturing on maybe not an extant Hebrew text that they have, but one that they think might have existed. I might also just add a little bit about the printing of what we could say were of the Hebrew Bible in general, and then just modern critical texts of the Hebrew Bible. I have a copy of this copy printed by the Trinitarian Bible Society, which is both the New Testament and the Old Testament, New Testament in Greek, the Old Testament in Hebrew, bound together. And this is the opening page to this edition of the Hebrew Bible printed by the Trinitarian Bible Society. It says, preface to the Bomberg, Ginsburg Hebrew Old Testament. In the early years of the 16th century, Jacob ben Chaim, a Jewish Christian, collected as many manuscripts of the Old Testament as he could acquire from around the world and collated them to produce the most complete printed Hebrew Old Testament possible. This volume, published by Daniel Bomberg in 1524-25, became the standard edition of the Hebrew Old Testament. It was the first to present a complete Masorah, the Masoretic notes on the text, and was the second rabbinic Bible, the only authorized Masoretic recension, becoming in time the Textus Receptus of the Old Testament for many, and was used as the basis for the Old Testament for many Reformation-era translations, such as the English Authorized Version and the Dutch Statenvertaling, as well as many versions up to the present day. Sure, it was the basis for probably the Spanish, Dutch, Hungarian, French Reformation-era Bibles. In the late 19th century, Christian David Ginsburg employed this text as the basis of his edition of the Hebrew Old Testament. It was initially published by the Trinitarian Bible Society in 1894 and was republished in 1998. So this is the traditional printed version of the Hebrew Bible, the text of the Hebrew Bible. What about the actual manuscripts of the Hebrew Bible, before printing, the copied versions, hand-copied versions? It's interesting to think that until the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls in 1947, the oldest handwritten manuscript of the Hebrew Bible known to be in existence was the Codex Leningradensis. That's in St. Petersburg. And it dated to the year AD 1008. So the earliest handwritten Hebrew manuscript of the Bible up until 1947 was the Codex Leningradensis, which is very important to talk about in just a moment. It's been reprinted as the standard text of the Hebrew Bible, Masoretic Hebrew Bible. So that's interesting. I mean, I think there was a tradition among the Jews to destroy any copy of the Bible that became worn. And so this is part of the reason why we don't have older manuscripts, is they destroyed old ones when they copied new ones. It's also interesting because sometimes people, you know, complain that our oldest copies of the Greek New Testament come from, or they complain about the age of the minuscule manuscripts of the Greek New Testament, that they come, you know, from the year 1000 or something like that. But again, that's the best we had of the Hebrew Bible. Scholars, though, the oldest manuscript we had was the Codex Leningradensis, 1008. Scholars had read versions of the Old Testament, translations of it in Latin, in Greek, and they were intrigued by differences. I already talked about the fact that the Septuagint has a wildly different text of the Old Testament compared to the Masoretic Bible. And on the basis of this, and there's also a work called the Samaritan Pentateuch. As the name indicates, the Samaritans, the biblical Samaritans, had the Torah, the first five books, as authoritative, and they had their own copies of that. And that text differs from the Jewish Masoretic text as well. On the basis of this, they speculated that there was diversity in the early copies of the Old Testament. And even though they weren't extant, they speculated that maybe in some places, again, under the project of reconstruction and not preservation, that they could determine these original readings from these ghost autographs that were used by the Septuagint or the Samaritan Pentateuch. Then the breakthrough was in 1947 when the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, and you know, they discovered the various caves and I think over 200 documents that dated from maybe the 3rd century BC all the way up to the early 1st century AD. And so for the first time, they had these treasure trove of documents that they previously scholars have these that they previously didn't have. And when they examined those, they found that the greatest majority of them followed what they call a proto-Masoretic text. That is, they were close to the traditional Hebrew text, the Masoretic text. An example of this would be what is called the Isaiah scroll that was discovered at Qumran. And it's a text of Isaiah, and it's with some, you know, minor differences of handwriting. It is basically the Masoretic text. They did find a minority number of manuscripts at Qumran, Hebrew texts that they called pre-Samaritan. They were like the Samaritan Pentateuch, and an even smaller number that they called proto-Septuagint, forerunners of what became known as the Septuagint, close to the Septuagint. And again, this find was very important. It showed, as again, wasn't a surprise, that there was some textual diversity. We already knew that from the Samaritan Pentateuch, from the existence of the Septuagint, but this showed it in Hebrew text. But it also showed that the Masoretic text was ancient, and that it was the majority reading, the mainstream reading. Now, again, though, they weren't willing to grant that it was a full-blown Masoretic text, and therefore, because of, there were some differences, they called it proto-Masoretic text and so forth. So we didn't have these texts of the Bible until 1947. So when Bomberg printed his Hebrew Bible, 1524-1525, that became the basis of the Reformation-era translations, including the Authorized Version. These things hadn't been discovered. It was simply using the traditional texts of the Bible, the Masoretic text. In more modern times, there has been an academic or a critical version of the Hebrew Bible. The German scholar Kittel produced an edition in 1906, and he essentially used Bomberg. He put a second edition out of this in 1913. Then he put out a third edition that was different in that it used instead Codex the Leningrad Codex as the basis for this edition. This was co-edited with another scholar named Paul Kahle, maybe Kahle, I'm not sure. And then for the first time in 1967, there was an edition of the Hebrew Bible that is called the Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia, because it was produced in Stuttgart, Germany, by two German scholars, Karl Ellinger and Willem Rudolph. And they, following Kittel's third edition of the Hebrew Bible, they also used Codex, the Leningrad Codex, as the basis of their edition of the Old Testament. And that has become the primary academic edition of the Hebrew Bible. If you go to seminary or Bible college and you're learning Hebrew, you're going to get the BHS, it's called, the Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia. The fifth edition of this was printed in 1990. There's apparently a new edition of it that will appear at some point in 2014. There was a reader's edition of the BHS that came out. But it really hasn't changed that much. Of course, what's interesting about these editions of the Old Testament is that they are what scholars call a diplomatic text. That it is not an eclectic text. The modern critical edition of the Greek New Testament is an eclectic text. Scholars use various manuscripts, Codex Sinaiticus and Vaticanus and Alexandrinus and the papyri, and they pick and choose. They elect or they choose the readings that they want. And they try to reconstruct the text. It used to be they thought they were reconstructing the original text. Most modern text critics have jettisoned the idea of any hope of being able to reconstruct the original text. But the New Testament is an eclectic text. Well, the Old Testament, however, again, it's a diplomatic text. And that is they choose one manuscript, Codex, the Leningrad Codex. And they make this the basis. And the Leningrad Codex is a Masoretic text. It's a traditional text. Now, in these later modern editions, they have loaded the footnotes with references to the Samaritan Pentateuch and to the Septuagint, but you don't really have the same type of reconstructed modern critical text of the Hebrew Bible that you have of the Greek New Testament. Where you see the influence of reconstruction efforts is in the translations of the Bible. And again, take the ESV and just flow the notes at the bottom of the page and notice the places where they suggest a reading drawn from the Dead Sea Scrolls or drawn from the Septuagint rather than a reading that is drawn from the Masoretic text. And again, I've given you examples from 1 Samuel. You can compare those. One of my go-to examples that I often use is Psalm 145, verse 13, where there's a half verse that's included in some modern translations like the ESV that's not there in the Masoretic text. So anyhow, this find of the En Gedi scroll and the amazing use of technology to unlock its content is an important find. And in the end, what does it do? It buttresses or reinforces the antiquity of the traditional text of the Hebrew Bible, the Masoretic text of the Hebrew Bible. It's not just a medieval text. It's not a late creation, but it is has ancient attestation, as ancient as any other stream that we have. And it is the text of the Hebrew Bible that has been providentially preserved. It has been translated. It has been useful for the church. And again, very interesting. I hope you'll go to my blog, jeffriddle.net. And again, you can watch the video. You can look at the link to the article. And again, I hope in upcoming days to be able to add some more Word magazines to the mix, including a review that I'm planning to do of a sermon on the ending of Mark that I recently listened to and think is probably worthy of some response. Till then, take care and God bless.
How my soul longs for His presence, for the ever-living God. When shall I behold His face in His holy dwelling place? Now I feed on tears from weeping, while they say, "Is your God sleeping?" All these things I call to memory, and I ponder in my heart, how with throngs I moved rejoicing to His temple's sacred court. Why my soul be in despair? Why this worry and this care? Hope in God, my soul's salvation, Him I'll praise with jubilation. When my heart despairs within me, then will I recall once more, as the headwaters of Jordan from the Mount of Hermon pour. Deep to deep roars out its sound, waves and rapids surging round. In the day God's love comes freely, and at night His song is with me. To my God, my rock, I murmur, how could you forget me? How? All my foes oppress and taunt me, where's your God? They ask me now. Why my soul be in despair? Why this worry and this care? Hope in God, my soul's salvation, Him I'll praise with jubilation.